You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Tim Cyclesman Wood, editor of Cycles News and Views on Cyclesman.com. He's speaking to us from Gulf Shores, Alabama. Welcome back to the show.
Jim, and thanks as always for having me.
The NASDAQ and S&P set record highs every week. Are we reaching a place where it's getting pretty toppy, and are we getting into traditional correction time, which would be August, September?
Well, interesting you bring that up, as I was just looking at that as I was waiting on you to call. Yes, the NASDAQ has made new highs. The S&P, I made a little list here just going through them. The NYSE, the AMEX, the Dow Jones World Index, and then looking at some of the foreign markets, as far as I got was, the FTSE and the DAX. Markets that have not made new highs, by the way, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the transports, the value line geometric and the value line arithmetic for that matter, the S&P 600, which is a small cap index, the CAC. And then the other thing that's going on is nobody pays attention to it anymore, which is a good thing. But, the Dow Theory primary bearish trend change that was triggered back in, it was March the 10th with the decline into the April low, that is still intact. And so I understand what you're saying is going into that seasonal period where you tend to see market tops, but that is also coinciding with, in my world, what would be an intermediate term top, where, we made an intermediate and slightly higher degree low in April with that low, and the advance is, at this moment in time is still intact. We've had an intermediate term buy signal the whole way. But timing-wise, we're getting into a point where that top should be getting close. We're frothy, let's put it that way. And once I get an intermediate term sell signal, then we should have that top in place. And that top, I think, Jim, you don't know until you get there and you see it. But I think what this is it's very reminiscent to me of the 2000 top, where the market peaked in with a four-year cycle in 98, turned up out of that, or turned down into the four-year cycle low, rallied into 99. We turned down in 99. A primary bearish trend change was triggered in accordance with Dow Theory. They made an intermediate term low, and then lo and behold, the market pressed up and made, the industrials and the S&P, the industrials peaked in January, the S&P followed in March, but the primary bearish trend change stuck. It held. And so it was a long process in building that top, and I think that's what's at risk here as we move into this time frame with this intermediate term top. Now, whether this is where the higher degree stuff takes hold, don't know yet. Got to see what develops. My thinking is, with the Dow Theory primary bearish trend change and some of the other things I'm seeing, that yes, this could be a very, very risky environment, and it could be where we see a much more meaningful turn.
And so your strategy in something like this, take your profits now?
I'm not giving specific market advice, but I think in the big picture, Jim, what we face, my story has not changed. I know it sounds like a broken record. I know this has taken forever. But the big picture, I've done some interviews. I've done some with you. We've talked about it. It's been a while. Maybe we need to talk about that in the next interview and lay it out again. But, going back into the early 1800s, there's been six long-term economic cycles. The fifth cycle peaked in 2000, bottomed in 2002, and we've been in the sixth cycle ever since. And this sixth cycle, in summary, it has been fabricated. And when I say fabricated, it's not been based on sound underlying economic underpinning with real economic growth. It's been based on monetary policy, Operation Twist and QE and what the Fed is doing and cutting interest rates and raising interest rates and all sorts of manipulations and games and all that sort of thing. And it's all been a fabricated advance, blowing us up into this ginormous bubble. And the downturn, I know this is long-term, big picture, boring stuff, but it is what it is. The downturn out of the 2007 top was the first attempted downturn out of that long-term economic cycle, this fabricated long-term economic cycle. The COVID top in 2020 was a second attempted downturn. And this next intermediate term top is going to be an opportunity for the third attempted downturn to take hold. It began trying to take hold back in last December and into January and February, and then with the decline into April. And what we've seen is this tremendous, tremendously convincing is a better way of saying it, rally, which so far on the industrials has been counter trend. We hadn't quite made a new high. We're close. We've certainly tested those highs. And like I said, in other indexes, we've bettered those highs. But it's all part of the setting up of that process. And that's why I think that with this next intermediate term top, it's going to put us at certainly at risk of that higher degree turn. And, you know, what we've seen with this pause period with interest rates, where they, you know, they started to cut and then they just kind of flatlined, and, you know, rates have kind of bottomed out here and, you know, just kind of gotten stagnant, if you will. And that I think also is, well, I know, I don't think, I know that's also part of the process with this peaking. This is very, it's very normal. It's one of the signposts of where we are. And everybody thinks that we're seeing a reinflation. I think it's a false reinflation. And in the big picture, which is, it's hard to see the big picture because, you know, it's taken so long. And, you know, we look at this rally and, like I said, it's extremely convincing. But when you stand back and look at it, I think it's part of the process with that overall setup. And as of this conversation, you know, I don't have an intermediate term sell signal yet, but when I get one, you know, that's obviously something I'm following for subscribers. But when I get one, then, you know, we'll be at a point where things can start to happen.
The precious metals enjoying great popularity right now. What's the story for them?
Well, you know, precious metals, they're a little bit there's a little bit of uncertainty with them. But bottom line, I have said this and I'm sticking to my story. Precious metals, again, when you back up and you look at the big picture, and I think you have to do that to have the adequate grounding as to where we are. Precious metals bottomed back in, I think, at $252, gold specifically. I think it was $252 an ounce, and I believe it was 99 or 2000. It was late 99, and they slowly built a bottom. There was a 9-year cycle bottom, retesting that bottom in 2000, 2001, and then they started ticking up, and particularly after the 2002 low, they started ratcheting up. And they've been in an uptrend ever since. We've had a couple of 9-year cycle tops. There was a 9-year cycle top in 2011. Gold come down nicely into a low, and I think it was around 15. Then they up again. There was another 9-year cycle top in 2020, with the decline into that next 9-year cycle low was kind of faint, if you will. It wasn't much to it, but it bottomed in 22, and then we've just been straight up here ever since. But when you stand back and look at gold, and I know this isn't popular to say, but that's okay. I'm not going to say something to appease someone, tell you what I see, because I think I'm right. And in hindsight, people will look back at it and go, well, damn, he was right. But or I think they will, but gold, with that all said, gold has been an inflationary hedge, if you will, for the debt printing and this entire baseless, fabricated sixth long-term economic cycle that began in '02 with the bursting of the dot-com bubble. And like I just said, when I started talking about gold, it made a major low in 99 and kind of based there for a couple of years into that 01, 02 low. And from there, it's been straight up. So it's clear when you look at it in the right perspective that gold has been, it's been up because it has been a basically a function of, or a hedge against the deflationary force, or excuse me, the inflationary, environment that we've been in with the debt creation and you know, this bubble environment. But once the top is in and the gig is up, and that's what we face with this downturn out of this cycle. I mean, how, if this entire six long-term economic cycle is, the entire thing has been fabricated, I mean, can they save it again? I mean, that's one question. I mean, maybe. But I don't think so. And so if they can't, and, you know, the deflationary forces take hold, which, let me digress on that for a minute. You say deflationary forces, we faced tremendous inflation. That's right. That's right. We have. But why? And the why have they done what they've done with the debt expansion? Why have we seen the creation of the inflation that we've seen, which it has been created? Why have they done that? Because they are fighting the deflationary forces, the natural deflationary forces, and the unwinding of this debt-based fiat system. And that began, like I said, 25 years ago with the peaking of the dot-com bubble and then ultimately the low in 02. And so they've been fighting these forces ever since. So once the gig is up, and if this six cycle actually bites in the deflationary forces, or when this six cycle bites, it will bite. There's no escaping it. They've done a tremendous job at managing it and holding it and extending it. And they're geniuses at what they've done, but nonetheless, they've blown it into this ginormous bubble, the biggest bubble, financial bubble in history. And if it bites with this intermediate term cycle, I don't know. I that's my hunch. That's the next minefield, if you will. But when it bites and the deflationary forces take hold, then gold is no longer going to be a hedge against inflation, because we're going to turn to deflation, and I think gold is going to get hit just like everything else. And people, I know that's not popular to say, but when you look back at history at all of these other instances, all these other cycles, that's what you find, is that it's deflationary. And I understand that the one wrinkle is that with all of these other major downturns back in the 1800s and even up into the economic downturn with the Great Depression in 29 and into the 30s, I understand we had a gold, you know, a dollar that was, you know, backed by gold, and, you know, you still had silver money, et cetera. We had real money. So there's a little bit of a wrinkle, a little bit of a question there, but I think that gold is going to get hit just like everything else, all other asset classes. And as in all of these deflationary environments, the dollar, and I know this is unpopular to think because everybody thinks the opposite, but I think the dollar is going to be king.
Do you think the BRIC countries will ever be successful in coming up with a successful digital currency to challenge the U.S. dollar?
You know, I don't know exactly how this is all going to play out. I know that, you know, and it's a little bit out of my wheelhouse. I'm speculating on this part, but I think that, you know, Trump passed signed the Genius Act, and that's kind of paving the way loosely for some sort of a digital currency. And I know there's people that say, no, that's not what it is, and that, you know, Congress is has passed some. Trump has said that, you know, he was against that, and Congress has or the House had passed a bill saying that we weren't going to go there. But that bill has never even been introduced to the House. I think it's quietly going to die, or never pass on to the Senate. I don't think it's ever going to be. I think it's going to quietly die in the House. My hunch is that they're paving the way. Exactly to what, I don't know, but I think what we're going to see is some sort of another, I don't know how to say it, flim-flam scam, if you will, way of propping up the dollar via, I don't know if it'll be through the use of you know, the stablecoin thing, with the use of maybe backing it with T-bills. Maybe they do try to back it with gold, and that's the wrinkle that where this time is different with gold. And gold doesn't completely collapse. I do think it's going to get hit hard, but if they play that card and trying to use it to back the dollar in some sort of digital dollar, stable coin in some sort of way, then maybe gold isn't hit as hard. But I don't know exactly, but I do think that the foundation is being laid for some sort of a digital dollar. And the reason this is happening, I believe, is because they know that it is the end of the system as it is. That's what we face. That's why it's taken 20 years. That's why they have done what they've done and pumped this thing like they have and held it for 20 years. You know, I think, you know, this is monumental what we are seeing. And I think that, you know, quite honestly, they haven't been ready for it, and maybe they're not ready for it yet. I mean, how are you ever ready for such a thing? But I think that we're far enough down this road at this point to where they know that the gig is up, and this is all paving the way for whatever it is they have planned when the bubble unravels. And a digital currency, I think, is probably going to be a part of that in some way. I don't know. I don't know. Who knows? But I think that's where we're headed in general.
You think governments want digital currencies because, A, they know exactly what you're spending your money on. B, they can cut access to your money off with the push of a button. And C, tax every transaction.
Well, of course, it gives them more control. It gives them more control. Absolutely. That's the gravy. But I think the real thing is that, you know, personally, I believe, and I can't base this on anything, it's just me connecting the dots as I see it, but I think this whole Bitcoin thing and this cyber currency,
stable coin?
No, not stable coin. My mind went blank. Crypto. Crypto, this cryptocurrency craze, I think that this has been preparing the public for a digital currency. It's acceptance. We've been in this acceptance stage to condition people into this thing. And so I believe, like I said, that somehow, some way, it's going to be part of the new system, whatever that looks like. And of course, it's going to give more control. Absolutely. No question about it. It'll be, you know, I think that's coming. The other thing I think is coming out of this is, I mean, it's clear. I've seen three countries, and you say, and these are smaller countries that you wouldn't think would do it first, but the first one I saw was Mexico. Mexico is rolling out their biometric ID, and the article is not real clear, but it was saying that, and I did fact check this a little bit. I didn't just take it superficially. I looked into it a little bit, but I believe, as best I could tell, like I said, they were a little vague, I think, on purpose. But it looks like to me sometime February of 26, it's going to become somewhat mandatory. I mean, that was a deadline, it looked like. And then a week or so later, I see where the same thing is happening in Belize. And then I see where there was another country, Sri Lanka, I think. They're the same thing. They're rolling out this paving the way and implementing this biometric ID. And again, February was the deadline. So I think we're seeing countries in lockstep with this implementation. I believe the U.S. will probably be among you know, the last, but I think that's the direction we're going. I think this is all tied together to this financial collapse and the new system that will have to be put in place coming, you know, through the other side of this.
We'll have more with Tim Cyclesman Wood right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Tim Cyclesman Wood. Tim, any thoughts on where the energy markets are going?
Well, they've been in, just like everything else, they've been in this case, a counter-trend rally. I believe that the energy markets, the fact that they haven't continued higher, is telling us, I think that's a sign of the deflationary forces. Now, the last few days, yes, crude oil has been up pretty strong. But I think this is a retest type move, or maybe possibly an ending push into an intermediate term top. But just like everything else, they made a major low in April, and we've seen a bounce, and that's pretty much what it's been. You know, the high thus far out of that April low was in June, I believe, and I think we're trying to see a rollover there. And I think that the fact that energy hasn't made a higher high, and it's trying to turn, make a higher degree turn, or has made a higher degree turn. I mean, when you look back, the evidence suggests to me that we've seen a 3-year cycle top, and that lower prices are ahead. So I think that this is a sign of the deflationary forces that lie ahead, kind of a canary in the coal mine, so to speak. And once we get the setup to cap this bounce in commodities, gold is kind of at an interesting and somewhat vulnerable point here. I don't know if it's going to bite yet. And then we get the turn in equities, and then rates start back down. Then we're going to be in the zone where things can start to get exciting again, if you will. But right now, these rallies have gotten everybody complacent, which is, just part of the process as well. But I'm telling you, when you stand back and look at the big picture, this is not good, and I'm not changing my story on it. I know it's taken forever, and they've done a masterful job, but this next intermediate term top is going to be an opportunity, or it is the next opportunity for things to turn again.
Tim, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on?
Nope, that's pretty much it. Understanding this long-term environment and what's at risk, and like I said, Jim, it's such big picture, it's like you can't see the forest for the trees type thing. You know, everybody's looking at, the short term, and it's very difficult when you have somebody squawking about the risk here. And, this long term, it's very hard to see the big picture. I will say that, I've covered this. It's not just opinion. I have solid data in my research letters is subscription based, but I cover hard data in these letters showing where we are and like I said, research as to why I have the opinions that I have, and it's very hard to dispute. But in the meantime, we have to complete the setup. So I would say that anyone who's interested and they want to look into, why I have the views I have, they need to look at possibly a subscription to Cycles News and Views, and then they can get on board and understand why I'm saying what I'm saying. And, I also cover, once we do get an intermediate term sell signal, then I'll be covering, the progression of the events there, whether it's biting or whether they're saving again or what's going on in detail. So, it's more to it than just a newsletter, I promise you.
Tim, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Tim Cyclesman Wood, editor of Cycles News and Views on cyclesman.com. If you have any questions for Tim or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com Radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.